Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Grupo OHL third quarter 2017 conference call under full IFRS. My name is Jason, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. The disclaimer for this call can be found on page two of both the presentation and the report. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Luis Carlos Sarmiento Gutiérrez, President and CEO of Grupo OHL. Mr. Sarmiento, you may begin.
Morning, Jason. Thank you. Good morning, all, and thank you very much for joining our 2017 third quarter results call. Allow me to start by providing an update in reference to two recurring items in the agendas of our quarterly calls, Ruta del Sol and Electricaribe. Then I will also refer to our exposure to SITP. Regarding Concesionaria Ruta del Sol 2, CRDS, first, I will briefly recap where we left this tortuous story during our last quarterly call. As you may recall, I was excited to report that the creditor banks were close to receiving a first partial payment, as CRDS had just about fulfilled the two required obligations for that payment to be effective, stipulated under the agreement signed with the ANI on February 22nd and modified on March 27th of this year. I did also mention that in the August 3rd arbitration proceeding, where we had expected to settle with the ANI and to receive the arbitrator's ratification of the concession liquidation formula established under the terms of the agreement, the ANI stated its unwillingness to abide by the formula they had agreed to in the binding document. The ANI has since taken this stance to a new level and has proceeded to ignore the rest of its obligation under the agreement, including the obligation to effect the mentioned first payment. The arbitration tribunal, which is expected to meet again on September 1st, has failed to reconvene since due to several postponements. In contrast with the lack of progress in the arbitration tribunal, there has been significant movement on two other fronts. First, in the administrative state court, which is handling the class action suit to which I have referred in the past, and secondly, in Congress. A couple of days after our last call, the state court ordered CRDS to present to the ANI an updated detailed inventory of all its liabilities, including its financial obligations as of October 31st, and also ordered the ANI to review this information, and at most 20 labor days later, to use the almost $500 million already allocated to pay for Ruta del Sol to start paying these obligations. CRDS complied with the court's order. The ANI reviewed the information sent by the company and followed up with a couple of additional information requests, which have been answered. Therefore, in our estimate, the ANI now has until approximately December 11th to comply with its own court-mandated obligation. It looks as though the banks will receive a first substantial payment, not as a result of the termination agreement, but instead as a result of a court order. Additionally, just last week, both chambers of Congress approved a modification of Article 32 of the 2012 Law 1508, also known as the Infrastructure Law, as a result of which specific language was inserted into the law that specifies how to liquidate concessions declared null after events similar to those that terminated the CRDS concession. In our opinion, the liquidation formula inserted in the modified law serves fairly to calculate the liquidation value of a concession declared null and thus terminated. If the ANI abides by the state court order and by the mentioned modification of the law, the financial system will soon receive the long-awaited first payment, and the sponsors will have a definitive liquidation value and a timeline to receive such payments. With regard to Electricaribe, I mentioned during our last call that both the government and the financial system had agreed to work on a solution to financially save the company and to eventually pay the company's debt to the financial system. The banks and the government, through the Financiera de Desarrollo Nacional, the FDN, hired investment banks to come up with possible solutions. We were recently told that the FDN is ready to meet to discuss their findings and to share the findings of the banks. In the meantime, Gas Natural from Spain, the majority owner of Electricaribe, has expressed its willingness to sit down with the government to explore ways in which they can take back the company. Gas Natural is confident that with some regulatory and legal adjustments, Electricaribe is salvageable. We still believe that this is a long-term possibility at best, and therefore we have continued to book loan loss provisions to cover our exposure. I had mentioned that we would constitute provisions for 70% of our $200 million exposure during 2017, and I can now report that as of today's call, we are almost there. We have also started to make provisions for our exposure to certain companies associated with Bogotá's mass transportation system, SITP. Our total exposure to these companies is approximately $160 million, and as of September 30th, we had constituted provisions for approximately 13% of such exposure. By year-end, we expect to have booked accumulated provisions equivalent to 16% of our exposure, and our current plan is to bring provisions up to 50% of our exposure during 2018. As this is an essential service to Bogotá, we remain very attentive to the mayor's handling of this situation. We are fairly confident that sooner than later, the creditor banks will be called to participate in a City of Bogotá-sponsored refinancing of this debt. This refinancing will probably entail a long-term solution as well. We will revisit these problem credit situations during our next call. Regarding the current macroeconomic environment, although it is way too early to point to a definitive trend towards an acceleration of growth, it is probably a safe bet to declare that the worst of the deceleration is behind us. In fact, there are a few macroeconomic indicators that would seem to point in that direction. To start with, inflation numbers have been surprisingly low during 2017 and just recently broke the 4% barrier on a last 12-month basis. It might just be that inflation for 2017 will come in at approximately this same 4% number. Not long ago, we should remember that inflation on a 12-month basis had risen above 9%. The central bank lived up to its mandate and fought hard against losing control of this index through the application of a contractionary policy, which drove rates up to a high of 7.75% almost at the end of 2016. And once the inflation trend started to ease, so did the bank's monetary policy, which has decreased its rate by 300 basis points since its highest level last year. The central bank's monetary policy should, in the medium term, help with consumer delinquencies as rates drop and prices of consumer goods hold. We do not see much more room for easing, but nevertheless, we expect that 2018's inflation will come in closer to 3.5%. Another contributing factor to a controlled inflation number is oil exports, which have diminished as a percentage of total exports from 50% in 2014 to 33% in 2017. This has helped to diminish the volatility of the peso-dollar exchange rate and therefore has made the price of imports more stable. The reduced volatility in the price of imports has also contributed to keep prices down and thus inflation. To close this loop, imports have also grown in 2017 at a much lesser rate than exports. In fact, as of August 2017, exports had grown by almost 20%, while imports grew 5.7%. Consequently, Colombia's trade deficit is also taking a turn in the right direction. We expect this indicator to end this year at 3.8% and further correct to 3.5% during 2018. The country's fiscal deficit has slowly started to turn in the right direction, and for this year, we expect it to come in at around 3.6%. However, we insist that the fiscal rules should be examined to avoid setting the country on a chase of an unattainable fiscal deficit objective that might deviate attention from Colombia's most pressing growth goals. Just recently, three rating agencies expressed that a modification of the fiscal rule would not be credit negative for the country. This is just food for thought, though. In any case, the country's growth in the third quarter was 2% after observed growths of 1.2% in the second quarter and 1.3% in 2017's first quarter. Taking into account that the last quarter of 2016 grew at 1.6%, we should see better growth during this year's last quarter for a total growth during 2017 of approximately 1.7%. Next year, we expect to see growth closer to between 2.4% and 2.5%. However, to achieve this better growth, we believe that 4G infrastructure projects must get underway in earnest, as well as those projects' financing. We hope that the resolution of Ruta del Sol's liquidation will be the trigger to this necessary component of next year's growth strategy. In the meantime, our very own Corficolombiana's lackluster results for this year have been largely affected by this slow start in its own 4G infrastructure projects. We remain concerned with unemployment and specifically urban unemployment. This indicator continues to be our main worry as it relates to the health of our consumer loan portfolios. That is a major reason why we have made an effort to safeguard the quality of our loan portfolios in lieu of growth. This strategy has probably resulted in slower growth than our peers, but in our opinion, has proven right. Evidence of its success is observable upon comparing the quality of the loan portfolios of our banks versus the rest of the financial system. During this year's third quarter, our pension fund manager, Porvenir, also continued to perform very favorably, supported in one, the increasing new funds coming into its system, and secondly, by the high returns of its assets under management. Our Central American operation, which is 30% of our business now, continues to perform strongly. Growth seen in BAC's loan book in dollars is greater than the growth of our Colombian loan portfolios. Cost of risk is controlled despite some events in Costa Rica and Panama. Efficiency is improving, and ROE is sustained. As we have said before, BAC continues to be an integral part of our strategy, as it has proven to be an excellent investment for Aval and a great source of diversification. Now, turning to Aval's financial results, I will briefly run over the main highlights and then pass this over to Diego, who will refer in detail to our business results. Partly as a result of our strategy and partly due to the slow economy, on a consolidated basis, during the third quarter, our total loans declined 0.2% versus the second quarter of 2017, which is a 0.9% increase in absence of the impact of the close to 4% revaluation of the currency during the period. In the last 12 months, our consolidated loan book grew by 7.9%, which is 7.3% in absence of FX movements. Our 30-day PDLs and our 90-day NPLs deteriorated by approximately 20 basis points in the quarter to 4% and 2.7% respectively. The positive element in this quarter is that our consumer portfolio quality improved 10 basis points versus the previous quarter. This is clearly differentiating us versus our peers as our indicators continue to show deterioration while they continue to grow faster than we do. A second positive element is that the PDL formation continues to show a positive trend. Cost of risk for the quarter, net of recoveries, was 2.6% versus 2.7% in the previous quarter, including a 150 billion peso provision expense related to Electricaribe versus 108 billion pesos during the second quarter. Electricaribe accounted for 40 basis points of the cost of risk during the quarter. In sync with a slow economy, total deposits declined by 2.2% in the quarter, which is minus 1.1% excluding the impact of FX movements in our Central American operation in the last 12 months. In the last 12 months, deposits grew by 7.9%, which is 7.3% excluding FX movements. Partly as a consequence of the continued growth slowdown and partly as a consequence of the FX revaluation of the period, the third quarter was one in which our consolidated equity ratios improved. Our total equity to total assets ratio improved from 10.7% in June 2017 to 11% in September 2017, and our tangible capital ratio improved from 7.6% to 8%. On a positive note, improving our net asset sensitiveness, despite continuing to see a steep decline in interest rate environment, our NIM only declined by approximately 15 basis points to 5.9% during the quarter. During 2017, NIM resilience has offset to some extent the increase in the provision expense, and thus has limited the negative impact of the increase in the cost of risk in the ROE. Declining interest rates are expected to continue as well as NIMs, but we expect that our cost of risk will also decline, setting up ourselves for a stronger ROE in 2018. Our consolidated NIM on loans remained constant at 7% during the quarter, and our consolidated NIM on total investments had a mediocre performance with a ratio of 0.3% versus 1.4% in the previous quarter. Our gross fee income grew by 1% in the quarter when compared to the second quarter of 2017. This performance continues to surpass the growth of our balance sheet. Our other operating income for the period was 525.2 billion pesos for the quarter versus 493.1 billion pesos in the previous quarter, supported by a better performance of our non-financial sector. Our consolidated efficiency ratio showed a slight improvement measured as cost to income, 46.8% in the third quarter versus 46.9% during this year's second quarter. Our implicit tax rate was 40.3%, which compares negatively versus 35.6% during the previous quarter. There are several reasons for this, including the generation of more taxable income, and because during this quarter we did not book as many tax recoveries as we had during the first semester of this year. In conclusion, due principally to specific credit exposures, to problem clients such as Electricaribe and SITP, to slow growth, to the slow start of 4G infrastructure projects, and to the tax rate, which were partially offset by comparatively better loan portfolio quality and healthy growth in fee income, net income for the quarter was 437.9 billion pesos, or 20 pesos per share, compared to 470.8 billion pesos in the second quarter of this year. I now pass on the presentation to Diego, who will expand on the highlights that I just shared with you. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thank you, Luis Carlos. I will now move to the consolidated results of Grupo Aval under IFRS, starting on page 9 with our asset evolution. As mentioned by Luis Carlos, growth was low during the quarter, consistent with the poor GDP cycle. In absence of the effect of the Colombian peso fluctuations on Central America, assets were stable during the quarter and grew 4.8% during the last 12 months. In peso terms, total assets decreased by 1.2% during this quarter and increased 5.4% over the last 12 months. Asset dynamics, excluding FX during the quarter, resulted from a 0.9% or 1.4 trillion pesos increase in gross loans and a 2% or 0.5 trillion pesos increase in total financial assets held for investments. These were offset by a 21.5% or 1.3 trillion pesos decrease in interbank and overnight funds, mainly in Colombia, and a 3.6% or 0.8 trillion pesos decrease in cash, mainly in Central America. Over the quarter, our Colombian assets slightly decreased 0.5% during the quarter, while our Central American assets grew at 0.9% in dollar terms, a 2.9% decrease when translated into Colombian pesos. As mentioned before, reductions in the interbank and overnight funds, particularly in Banco de Bogotá and Aravillas, determined the growth dynamics of our assets in Colombia. Over the 12-month period ended on September, our Colombian assets increased 3.8%, while our Central American assets grew 7.5% in dollar terms, a 9.6% increase when translated into Colombian pesos. Consolidated balance sheet structure remained substantially stable. Net loans and fixed income investments accounted for 68% and 9.6% of total assets, respectively, at end of this period. Given the 3.7% appreciation of the Colombian peso during the quarter, our Colombian operation slightly increased its share of assets by 51 basis points to 71.2%. On page 10, we present our loan portfolio evolution. As mentioned in our recent calls, the slow economic cycle has driven the modest loan growth experienced throughout this year. Loan growth resulted from a soft loan demand of our Colombian corporate customers and tighter consumer and SME underwriting practices throughout our operation. Considering the economic slowdown, our banks have emphasized products and segments with lower risk profiles. On the retail front, we have been prioritizing mainly on payroll loans and cross-selling of personal loans and credit cards to existing customers. Mortgages continue to be a source of growth in Colombia, given our still low market share. Gross loans increased 7.9% during the last 12 months and contracted 0.2% during the quarter. In absence of the effect of the peso depreciation on our Central American operation, 12 months and 3 months growths would have been 7.3% and 0.9% respectively. Colombia accounted for 71.6% of gross loan book. Colombian loans grew at 6.7% over the 12-month period and 0.3% during the quarter. Colombian consumer and mortgage loans continued to grow stronger than corporate loans, expanding 2% and 4% respectively over the quarter. This growth was partially offset by a 0.8% contraction of the corporate loan portfolio, mainly in the food, beverage, and tobacco industry, construction, and transportation and communication. Central America continues to be a more dynamic than Colombia, growing at 8.7% in dollar terms over the 12-month period, 10.9% when translated into Colombian pesos, and 2.4% in dollar terms during the quarter, a 1.4% contraction when translated into Colombian pesos. Quarterly growth was led by growth in Costa Rica, Panama, and Honduras, where loans expanded over 3%. Growth in the region was stronger in public services, which grew at 13.6%, construction, which grew at 25%, and transportation and communication, which grew at 6.3%. Broken down by type of loan over the last 12 months, mortgages grew 16.2% in Colombia and 5% in dollar terms in Central America. Consumer loans grew 8.6% in Colombia and 8.3% in dollar terms in Central America. Commercial loans grew 5.2% in Colombia and 11.1% in dollar terms in Central America. The structure of our gross loan portfolio continues to shift slightly towards loans to individuals. Loans to individuals, which includes consumer mortgages and microcredit loans, weighted 41.6% at end of period. This is 0.6 percentage points and 0.3 percentage points more than 12 months and 3 months earlier, respectively. We expect 2017 loan growth in absence of FX movements to be in the 6.7% area in 2017 and 9 to 10% area for 2018. On page 11, we present several loan portfolio quality ratios. During this quarter, we continue to experience a slight deterioration of our loan portfolio, mainly driven by an additional deterioration of our corporate loan portfolio in Colombia. On a positive note, the increasing delinquency of the Colombian consumer portfolio that we had reported during the previous quarters paused, hinting that the cycle might be reverting soon. This improvement in performance of the consumer portfolio resulted in a slight decrease in our cost of risk in spite of an increase in provisions on our Electricaribe exposure. It is worth pointing out that consistent with what we have experienced in previous credit quality cycles, our Colombian portfolio has performed better than the rest of the market. Year-to-date, our Colombian unconsolidated consumer PDLs have deteriorated 87 basis points to 5.6% of our Colombian gross loans. This compares well to the rest of the Colombian market, whose PDLs have deteriorated 182 basis points to 7.6%. Our better-than-market performance is mainly explained by a higher weight of our payroll loans in our mix and a more conservative underwriting of consumer loans along 2017. Starting on the top left of the page, you will find the evolution of our loans past due more than 30 days and of our NPLs, both as a percentage of total loans, including interest account receivables. During this quarter, our delinquency ratios measured as 30 days PDLs to total loans increased by 23 basis points to 4%. Delinquency measured as NPLs to total loans deteriorated by 22 basis points to 2.7%. Moving to the right, annualized net provision expense, net of recoveries of charged-off assets for the quarter, was 2.6% of average loans, showing a 10 basis points improvement as compared to the last quarter. Even though still high relative to our historic performance, this result is a slight improvement down from 2.7% recorded 3 months earlier. The Electricaribe and SITP impairments for the period accounted for 47 basis points of the quarter's cost of risk, 40 basis points Electricaribe and 7 basis points SITP. This is 17 basis points more than 30 basis points consumed a quarter earlier, 28 basis points for Electricaribe and 2 basis points for SITP. High cost of risk of the consumer portfolio has been mainly driven by higher than historic impairment losses in credit cards in both regions and in personal and auto loans in Colombia. Impairment of consumer portfolio explained 15 basis points of improvement in total cost of risk during the quarter. Of those, 9 basis points are explained by Colombia and 6 basis points by Central America. In Colombia, the improvement was led by a reduction in cost of risk of credit cards and auto loans. Bottom left, we present the annualized ratio of charge-offs as a share of average NPLs. This ratio continues at 0.7 times. Finally, on the bottom right, you will see several loan loss reserve coverage ratios. Our allowances were 3.4% of our total loans and cover 1.2 times our NPLs and 0.8 times our 30-day PDLs. We expect 2017 cost of risk net of recoveries to be in the 2.4% area. We foresee an improvement to 2.25% area for the next year as the consumer credit cycle starts to revert and a lower impact of large exposures such as Electricaribe. These are figures under IAS 39. Guidance on the impact under IFRS 9 will be included in our year-end report. On page 12, you will find further detail on the quality of our loan portfolio. As mentioned on the previous page, our overall end-of-period delinquency ratio, measured as 30 days PDLs to total loans, increased by 23 basis points to 4.0%. Deterioration was driven mainly by the commercial portfolio during the quarter. The right delinquency measured as NPLs to total loans deteriorated 22 basis points to 2.7%, broken down by type of loan quarter on quarter. Commercial loans experienced a 40 basis points deterioration to 3.4% when measured as 30 days PDLs. Colombia deteriorated 47 basis points to 4%, while Central America deteriorated 10 basis points to 1%. Delinquency measured as NPLs to total loans deteriorated 35 basis points to 2.8%. In Colombia, we evidence deterioration coming mainly from middle market and SME customers. Consumer loans experienced a 10 basis points improvement to 5.1% when measured as 30 days PDLs and remained stable when measured as NPLs. Mortgage loans deteriorated 19 basis points to 3.7% when measured as 30 days PDLs and 9 basis points 2% when measured based on NPLs. Bottom of the page, we present PDL evolution. Commercial loans were the main driver of PDL formation during the quarter, adding 437 billion pesos, 181 billion pesos more than a quarter earlier. However, consumer loan PDL formation receded 177 billion pesos to 572 billion pesos, mainly driven by credit cards and personal loans. On page 13, we present funding and deposit evolution. Our funding structure was substantially stable, with deposits representing slightly more than 76% of total funding and our CASA ratio over 57% of our deposits. Liquidity measured as cash to deposits was close to 15%. This slight decrease is explained by a reduction in excess cash positions in Central America that we built earlier during the year as a reaction to the downgrade of El Salvador during the first quarter of this year. Over the 12-month period, deposits have evolved in line with loans, maintaining the deposit-to-loan ratio at 95%. Total funding grew 6.2% over the last 12 months and decreased by 1.5% during the quarter. Deposits increased 7.9% over the last 12 months and decreased 2.2% during the last quarter. In absence of the effect of the Colombian peso exchange rate fluctuations on Central America, 12-month and 3-month total funding growths would have been 5.7% and minus 0.5% respectively, while 12-month and 3-month deposit growths would have been 7.3% and 1.1% contraction respectively. Colombia accounted for 72.5% of the total funding and 71.8% of total deposits. Funding in Colombia grew 5.1% over the last 12 months and decreased 0.8% during the quarter, while deposits grew 6% over the last 12 months and decreased 1.8% during the quarter. The contraction during the quarter was driven by Banco Bogotá, which reduced its time deposits by 5.8% while maintaining a healthy deposit-to-net loan ratio of 99%. Central American funding grew 7.3% over 12 months in dollar terms, or 9.4% in Colombian peso terms, and increased over the last quarter by 0.4% in dollar terms, 3.4% decrease in Colombian peso terms. Deposits grew 10.8 in dollar terms or 12.9 in Colombian peso terms over the last 12 months and increased 0.8 in dollar terms, a 3% decrease in Colombian peso terms during the quarter. Lower deposit growth in Central America resulted from an adjustment in liquidity described earlier. We expect deposits for 2017 and 2018 to grow slightly below loans. On page 14, we present the evolution of our total capitalization, our attributable shareholders' equity, and the capital adequacy ratio of our banks. Our total equity, defined as attributable equity plus minority interest, was 25.2 trillion pesos as of the end of the third quarter of 2017. This implies a 5.9 increase over the last 12 months and a 1.9 increase during the last quarter. Attributable equity accounted for 63.1% of total equity as of September 2017 and was 15.9 trillion pesos as of the end of this period, increasing 4.9% during the last 12 months and 2.4% during the last quarter. Mainly earnings generating during this quarter explained equity growth during the period. Consolidated solvencies at the end of period were 14% for Banco de Bogotá, 12.7% for Banco de Occidente, 10.9% for Banco Popular, and 12.4% for Banco Avevillas. Tier 1 end-of-period ratios ranged from 9.1% for Banco de Bogotá to 11.1%. All of our banks show appropriate Tier 1 and total solvency ratios. Starting on page 15, we present the evolution of net interest margin. As mentioned in the past, even though minor, our non-financial sector activities have some impact on our net interest margin ratio. For the benefit of comparison with other financial institutions, we provide on this page information on the relevance of our non-financial sector activities in our operation. Financial sector activities contribute with almost all of our interest-earning assets. Financial sector entities account for close to 99% of our interest-earning assets. Promigas operation contributes most of the interest-earning assets from the non-financial sector. These assets are mainly items that were incorporated late last year that are considered financial leases provided by the company under IFRS. Even though light in our mix, funding associated with our non-financial activities and holdco account for 5.2% of total funding and 8% of total interest expense. In general, the non-financial sector carry higher cost of funds than those of our financial operation given their longer maturities and higher risk premiums. The total weight of our non-financial operation reduced our net interest margin in 21 basis points. The share of our liabilities has remained relatively stable over the past 5 quarters. However, we expect it to grow over the coming years due to the impact of the financing of the upcoming fourth-generation concession infrastructure projects. Moving to page 16, we present our yield on loans, cost of funds, and spreads. During this quarter, yield on loans and cost of funds fell at similar paces, leaving the spread substantially stable at 7.2% and 10 basis points higher than 4 quarters earlier.